It's really amazing to think about how quickly the American landscape changed in the 19th century, right? Industrialization and urbanization exploding. Like, I mean, how would institutions like the church even keep up with all that? It really makes you wonder how they adapted to such rapid changes.
That's actually exactly what we're looking at in this deep dive. So you send over this lecture by Dr. Roger Green, and it digs deep into how American churches grappled with, well, massive urban growth and industrialization in the 19th century. Our mission today is to really pull out those key insights. You know, Dr. Green's insights about the specific challenges churches face and all the different ways they try to, like, you know,
Tackle them.
tackle them. Yeah, exactly.
I think one of the things that Dr. Green really drives home is just the enormity of the change. You know, like the societal upheaval going on. We're talking about people working crazy long hours, like 14, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and for like incredibly low wages, about a dollar a day.
$1 a day. So you can imagine, you know, entire families having to work just to, you know, just to survive,
So you
really.
get by, yeah.
And it put immense pressure on those families. And the source material points to this, like, stark contrast between the haves and the have-nots.
Oh, totally,
Like,
yeah.
you've got these lavish Newport mansions, and they were often just summer homes, right?
Oh, wow.
Juxtaposed with these, like, cramped, desperate conditions of the Lower East Side tenements.
Yeah, that's a pretty dramatic contrast.
This huge economic gap. And as you can imagine, it had these ripple effects throughout society, impacting everything, including, as we'll see, the church.
Totally. And one of the first things that Dr. Green points to is this shift within the Protestant population. It seems like more and more Protestants were just like drifting away from the church. They felt like it was out of touch, you know, with their lives and their realities. And some even became like straight up antagonistic towards it.
Almost like a resistance to the institution.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising to think about, right? I mean, church was once so central to life, and suddenly there's this disconnect.
You have to wonder, right? Like, what wasn't the church providing? Or how had the needs of the people changed that the church just wasn't meeting?
Yeah, you make a good point. Maybe it was like a mismatch, you know, between what the church was offering and what people were actually struggling with in these new urban industrial settings.
Totally. It's like the message just wasn't resonating with the reality of their lives.
Exactly. And Dr. Green makes this really interesting comparison in the lecture.
It's a
He notes that for Roman Catholics and other immigrant churches, like the Lutherans, it was kind of the opposite.
Oh, interesting.
You know, for those groups, the church actually became like a vital anchor in this new environment. It was a place where they could find community and support and kind of a refuge from, well,
A hostile home.
sometimes a very hostile urban world. They hadn't experienced that same kind of like distancing from the church.
It makes sense, though, when you think about it. For immigrants, the church could be more than just a place of worship. It was a cultural hub.
Oh, for sure.
Like, they could connect with people who spoke their language, shared their traditions,
Absolutely.
you know, all in this new country where things were unfamiliar and probably a bit scary.
Yeah.
So that sense of belonging, you know, of shared identity must have
Yeah.
been super important.
So the source material, it lays out this growing divide, right, between the church, the Protestant church in particular, and this urban population. And that leads us to this big question. How did churches try to bridge that gap? Like, what were the different responses to this challenge?
Dr. Green, he outlines five major responses, each one like a different way that churches tried to grapple with these huge societal shifts.
Okay, so let's dive into those. The first response that he talks about is what he calls the Exodus.
The Exodus. Interesting. What does Dr. Green say about that?
Well, he says that some Protestant churches, the ones that had enough money, they just decided, you know what, we're leaving. We're out of here.
So they just
They literally relocated to areas outside of the city.
like abandoned the cities.
And Dr. Green argues that this created two big problems. Like, one, they became geographically removed from the issues and the people they were like supposed to be serving.
So they're physically far away.
And then the other thing is that, he says, it led to a kind of moral remoteness.
Moral remoteness.
Yeah, like it became harder for them to understand or even really engage with the ethical and social problems that were happening in these crowded inner cities.
It's like out of sight, out of mind.
It's like, how can you address something you're not even exposed to?
And it's interesting because as Dr. Green points out, this exodus kind of foreshadowed the development of suburbia after World War II.
Oh, wow. That's a good point.
Yeah. So this move away from the urban centers that started in the 19th century, it's like an early version of that larger trend decades later.
So the second response that he talks about is the struggling stairs.
Oh, okay. So they stayed put.
They did, yeah, but it wasn't easy. These were the churches that didn't have the money to just up and move.
Right, makes sense.
So they stayed in the city, but they really struggled to survive.
And what was the consequence of that struggle?
Well, Dr. Green says it led to a kind of like inward focus.
Inward focus.
Yeah, they kind of became these little self-contained worlds that were disconnected from what was happening right outside their doors.
Right.
You know, they didn't have the resources. They didn't have the leadership.
Yeah.
And maybe even the vision.
The vision, right.
To really engage with their community.
Okay.
He tells this story about a church meeting in a basement in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
And it just like perfectly captures this feeling of being trapped, you know?
Right. Just trying to survive.
And unable to really look outward.
That's powerful imagery.
Yeah. It's like they were so focused on just keeping the lights on that they missed opportunities to connect with people.
Right.
Right in their own neighborhoods.
Now, the third response, the powerful city churches. That sounds like a different story.
It is. Yeah. These were the churches that stayed in the city, but they had like wealth,
right.
Power, and influence.
Yeah.
They built these magnificent churches, some of which are still landmarks today.
I mean, yeah, you think about like Trinity Church in Boston, where Phillips Brooks preached,
right.
Or Riverside Church in New York, built by, you know, the Rockefellers.
Exactly. And Dr. Green says these churches, they often had these charismatic preachers,
yeah.
Who could draw in like big crowds.
And who were they drawing in?
Well, they attracted a pretty diverse group, including wealthy people, influential people, and even what he calls like the cultured despisers of religion.
Cultured despisers of religion.
Yeah. It's kind of a funny term, but he's talking about like...
I see. The intellectuals.
Yeah. Like the intellectuals, the skeptics, the people who were powerful in society, but maybe still kind of look down on religion.
Okay.
So reaching that segment of society, I mean...
That's got to be a challenge, right?
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
But Dr. Green does point out that there's a potential downside to this.
What's that?
Well, there's always this temptation to kind of like water down the message to make it more appealing to these influential people.
Right, I get it.
You know, like maybe avoiding topics that might be controversial.
Right, like sin or judgment.
Exactly, because they don't want to, you know.
Offend.
Yeah, offend anyone or lose their support.
That's a real tension, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you stay relevant?
Totally.
How do you stay influential?
Yeah.
But also stay true to your, like, core values.
Absolutely. And the fourth response is where things get really interesting. Dr. Green calls it new strategies and organizations.
New strategies and organizations. Okay.
Yeah. It's like people started realizing that the old ways of doing things weren't working anymore.
Mm. They needed to innovate.
Exactly. And he highlights four key groups that emerged during this time.
What were they?
Well, first, there was the American Sunday School Union. They were founded way back in 1824.
1824.
And their big thing was education. They focused on teaching people how to read and write.
So they could read the Bible.
Exactly. And this was especially important for people in these like tough urban environments.
Mm-hmm.
It gave them access to scripture and it helped to create a more like literate population.
Literacy, that's foundational.
For sure. And then there was the YMCA.
The YMCA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I know today is mostly associated with gyms and fitness. But
right. But originally.
It was completely different. It started as an evangelical movement focused on helping young men in cities.
Uh-huh.
But they took this really holistic approach. They focused on spiritual development, educational development, social development. Like
the whole person?
Exactly. And the lecture mentions Dwight L. Moody, who was a prominent evangelist at the time.
Yeah, I know him.
He was the president of the YMCA in Chicago. So, yeah, it had very strong religious roots.
And now it's just the Y.
I know. It's funny how that happens. And then there's the Salvation Army.
The Salvation Army.
Yeah, they were founded in England in 1865.
Okay.
And they came to the U.S. in 1880.
All right.
And they had a really unique approach.
What was that?
They would go directly into the poorest parts of the city.
Wow.
And live among the people they were serving.
That's pretty radical.
It was. And their philosophy was all about like meeting both the spiritual and the material needs of people.
Oh, I see.
They believed that you couldn't really help someone without addressing both.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So they provided things like, you know, daycare.
Right, practical help.
Food, clothing, home assistance.
Meeting those immediate needs.
Yeah, it was this really hands-on, practical approach.
What a great example of, like, walking the walk.
Totally. And then the fourth strategy was non-denominational revivalism.
Oh, yeah, the revival.
Yeah, these were, like, the big, you know...
Camp meetings come to the city.
Exactly, and figures like Charles Finney and Dwight L. Moody were really prominent in this movement.
And they were, like... hugely successful in the cities.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising because they actually had a lot of anxieties about it at first.
Really? Why?
Well, they weren't sure if their message would resonate in these urban environments.
Oh, right. It's a different world.
Yeah, but they were wrong. The revivals were incredibly popular, and the lecture talks about three main reasons why.
Okay, let's hear them.
So first... they helped to combat this sense of anonymity and loneliness that was, like, so prevalent in the cities.
Okay, community.
Yeah, they provided a sense of belonging and connection.
Right.
Second, they offered a break from the monotony of factory work.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Like, it was exciting. It was something different.
Uh-huh.
And third, for those who felt like traditional theater was sinful,
okay,
the revivals provided a kind of substitute.
Oh, interesting.
Because they had music and drama.
Right. Entertainment.
Exactly. Yeah. So they were filling a real need in urban life.
That's fascinating. It's like they were tapping into something people really craved.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the lecture mentions that even Billy Graham later on had some of these same concerns about urban evangelism.
Yeah. It's an ongoing challenge.
Totally. And then finally, we get to the fifth response, which is theological re-understanding.
Theological re-understanding.
Yeah, and this is often referred to as the social gospel movement.
Oh, right, the social gospel.
Yeah, and this was a pretty radical shift.
In what way?
Well, they were basically reinterpreting the core message of the gospel.
Okay.
And developing these new theological frameworks to address the social issues of urban life.
They were trying to, like, make the gospel relevant to the problems of the day.
Exactly. And the lecture mentions that we'll be digging into this more in a future discussion.
Oh, good.
Especially because you're reading that biography of Walter Rauschenbusch right now.
Right. The father of the social gospel.
Yeah. And he's a key figure in this movement.
I'm really looking forward to learning more about him.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff. And I think it speaks to this larger question of how Christianity evolves and adapts to new challenges.
Definitely.
So just to recap, we've looked at these five major responses, right?
Yes.
The exodus from the cities, the struggling stayers, the powerful city churches.
The strategies.
Yeah, with the Sunday School Union, the YMCA, the Salvation Army, and the revivals.
And of course, the social gospel.
Right. And it's amazing to see this whole spectrum of reactions.
Yeah.
You know, from withdrawal to innovation to complete theological reevaluation.
Absolutely. And it makes me think about how institutions today, not just churches,
right,
are grappling with these massive societal shifts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got technology rapidly changing things, globalization,
yeah,
political polarization,
right, climate change,
all these forces at play. It makes you wonder, like, what are the lessons from the 19th century?
That's a good question.
You know, what can we learn from how churches responded back then?
Totally.
That might help us navigate the challenges we face today.
Yeah, how do we balance tradition with the need to adapt?
And how do we stay true to our core values,
right,
while still being relevant to a changing world?
It's a lot to think about. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure. I always love exploring this stuff with you.
And to all our listeners, keep those questions in mind.
Yeah, keep thinking, keep exploring.
And we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.
Bye, everyone.